And with that, I'm going to introduce Eric M. from Massapequa.
Good morning. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Eric.
Hi, Eric.
Roy suggested, and I would agree, I learned a prayer around these rooms that I find helps keep us in this moment. What happens is after a while you get used to this setting and get comfortable in my recovery, and I found that that's very dangerous. It's important for me to keep it right now, and they call this a set-aside prayer. It's real simple. I've heard it said in many different ways, but basically it goes, God, please set aside everything that I think I know about these steps, this book, and you, so that I may come to a new experience and relationship with all of these things. Amen. Just by saying that, it keeps me right here and now. So I'm going to give you guys a brief history of what it was like when I was active, and then really concentrate on my experience with this particular step, the fourth step. I don't know that my story is any different from any other alcoholics. I did grow up in a household where alcoholism was very prevalent. It was normal. So that was my normalcy. I didn't know anything other than that. It was perfectly acceptable for people to come home out of their mind drunk and act foolishly. to say the least. I was a quiet kid. I was very uncomfortable with myself as early as I can remember. I never felt like I fit in quite right. And that went on for years. And I want to say it was probably the third time that I ever touched alcohol that I believe, by looking back, that I drank as an alcoholic, where I lost control. And it was the most wonderful thing that had ever happened to me. And it was like that for a few years. It was great. It really was great. Suddenly all of those insecurities and I'm not good enough melted away because I had found what was my driving force in life. Suddenly I had purpose. Suddenly I was really good at something. You know, suddenly I had all these new friends. And that worked great for a little while. I had a completely new identity. I went from a straight-A student to, you know, being thrown out of two different high schools three times. I started when I was 15. The first time I attempted to stop, I was 17. I tried to convince myself that if I didn't drink for a month, that I really didn't have a problem. Now, never mind that normal people don't have that thought pattern in their head. If they think they have a problem with something, they just stop. They don't have to prove to themselves that they aren't of this class, that they don't belong. I lasted 3 weeks, and it was a miserable 3 weeks. Something I discovered is people like me, real alcoholics, you take our medicine away, things get worse. They don't get better. I was nuts. And that would be a snapshot of my drinking. That was how my life went until I got in here at 21. Things would get completely out of control. I would try and slam on the brakes, try and get things together, whatever would happen. Maybe I got arrested. Maybe it was usually some sort of external influence that woke me up for a split second and said, hang on, something is out of control here. You lost your job. You're getting thrown out of school. Your family hates you. And I would try and stop. And if I'd last a few days or a week or sometimes even a month or so, and then the lie would come back into my head that I had done well and I deserved to do this again. And then it was off to the races. I was completely out of control. And the quantities got worse. The dry goods got more exciting and more expensive and more prevalent. And it just, there was never enough. And some people suffer from the lie that I'll just have one. My lie was a little different. It was, I'm just going to get really blasted tonight and then never do it ever again. Which obviously didn't work. Or it was because of these people or that color bottle or the location I was at or the shoes I was wearing or the music I was listening to. It was everything but me. Everything but me. When I finally, I ended up in AA the first time I was 19, and I don't know, it wasn't the right time. I had to go destroy myself another 2 years. And my sobriety date is July 14th of 99. I came into a group in Atlanta where I was living at the time, and it was a mixed bag there, and that was something I really liked about that meeting. It was every walk of life, every different age, and people genuinely seemed happy, and I can't emphasize enough how much I didn't believe it. I thought it was a scam. Some guy picked up a 3-year coin at one of my first meetings, and I was sure the guy was lying. That's completely impossible. There's no way that anyone can do that. I hung around for a little while. I was very uncomfortable. I did not talk. I didn't know what to do. And eventually someone put it very simple. A guy stuck his hand up. He said, look, you get in here, you get honest, you ask for help, you go through the steps, and your life changes. And I took his number. I didn't call him. I waited a few weeks until I was freaking out, and I called him one night. It's Mark, I'm losing my mind. And he assured me that I had, in fact, lost my mind, and it's okay, because it's kind of a requirement to be here. And the very next day, I met with this guy, and we sat down, and we got into this book here. The beauty of this program is that, you know, 100 people out of nowhere got sober, and it's worth mentioning that 100 people didn't used to get sober. That just didn't happen. And they were so astounded that they wrote a book. So I don't have to make stuff up, and I don't have to go on somebody else's word for this. They wrote it all down, you know. And that's what this guy did. He sat me down, and we started to read this book together. And as much as I didn't buy into this at the beginning, it started to frighten me, because I thought someone had been taking notes when I went through this book, following me around. Because the way that these people drank and the emotions that they dealt with and the behaviors were identical to what I had been doing. You know, I was 21, this was 1999, this was written by a stockbroker in 1939. You know, how is that, and how is the guy sitting next to me, how did he feel the exact same way? It started to frighten me and also give me just a touch of hope, just a touch. The first 3 steps, I can't say that I fully accepted any of that. I just went along with it in the beginning. I said the prayers, and I believed as well as I could. It certainly isn't the way it is today, but I did the best that I could. And eventually Mark threw a 4th step at me, and that's where we are today. I was tempted to bring my 4th steps with me, because I have a stack. And I don't say that to brag. I say that because I was really, really sick. And I believe very strongly in this tool, because up until I stepped into recovery, my life was a series of lies. Lies that perpetuated to the point that they tried to kill me. And I believed them. And this inventory, this 4th step deal, is one of the only things that I've ever found that will take my life and those lies, put them on a piece of paper, and make it all clear. And now I can see which one of these are real, which one of them are fake, and how much of it is really me just being sick. And how little it really has to do with the people around me and situational stuff. It's really about me. The very first time I went through with the 4th step, we used the Joe and Charlie 4-column inventory sheets. And I can distinctly remember asking Mark in the middle of it, do you really think this is going to work? And he was a good sponsor. He told me to shut up and write. And that's what I did, you know. And the very, you know, the beginning part of that, where you write down a list of everybody you're ever angry at, I had a field day with that. That was spectacular. I mean, that was just great. You start writing, and then a name comes up, and you're like, oh, I hate this guy, and all of everybody that looks like him, and just everything, and writing, and writing, and writing. And finally got it all down, all in the right format and everything, and Mark and I started to do a fifth step, and you know, the emotions and the trust that builds during that is just really beautiful, and then he moved. He had to go get married, and I'll never do that to a spouse. That was awkward, and I don't recommend anybody holding a loaded fourth step. I think it's very important that if you've gone through all this effort to write this stuff down, you got to get that stuff out, because it's designed to drag up garbage. You know, if you're writing this and it's making you feel uncomfortable and it's making you question your beliefs, it's doing what it's supposed to do. You know, that's its job. Another cool thing about this is, I mean, at least I am, I'm powerless over this disease that lives in my head. This is one of the few physical things that I can actually do that's basically giving my disease the middle finger. It's saying, hey, look, I want to get better. So, eventually I did end up, two sponsors later, with this guy, Eric, and we sat down in the park, beautiful day, and went all the way through it. And if you haven't gotten there yet, there's no feeling in the world like that first fifth step. I was at peace, I was at ease, I was happy. I was somebody else. I wasn't quite sure who that person was, but I liked it. And it was a drastic change in my life. I genuinely felt God in my life at that point. Not that I understood it, or that I really even understand that higher power today, but it was there, and I couldn't argue with it. You know, some dramatic things happened to me shortly thereafter. I met my biological father for the first time. He was also an alcoholic, and sober a number of years. You know, I followed through with the rest of this work and prepared relationships with my family, where I get along with them better than I ever did. And, you know, I can't take credit for that. What did I do? I wrote some stuff down in a book, and I talked about it with somebody else who had the same things happen to him. You know, it sounds silly. It's not the kind of thing that I can wrap my head around. It doesn't make sense. But if I do it, then it makes perfect sense. I moved back to New York, found another sponsor, and again, this is an incredible tool. You know, although my alcoholic obsession had been removed, there was an awful lot of garbage floating around within me that would come up at the most opportune moments, let me tell you. And Eric would always throw me back to, a different Eric, oddly enough, would always throw me back to, put it in inventory. And I kept doing that, and it's like peeling an onion. I mean, you get to another layer, and there's another little bit of me there. And, you know, some of them I really hated writing, but I didn't know what else to do. You know, it uncovers the truth. And I stuck with that same four-column setup for quite a while. Did several inventories with that. It helped me out through some pretty traumatic stuff as time went by. You know, losing a job, working for the family that was supposed to be my big career that fell through. It wasn't what I was led to believe, and it really hurt. Worked a nice four-step out with that. You know, was ready to kill my grandfather. We get along spectacular today. My father relapsed after about 16 years collectively, and he died in a year thereafter. That brought up an inventory that I didn't even know was in me. You know, I've heard some people say that you really only have to do this once, and I just don't agree with that, because every time that I've done this, it's brought me closer to me and knocked down those walls that my ego continues to rebuild. Continues to put up new walls and new challenges so that it's harder for me to talk to God. It's harder for me to stay connected. But if I continue to go through this process, it knocks them down again. And I learn new stuff. Stuff that I didn't even expect. Stuff that I didn't know was there. And then you get to give it to other people. You know, when you get a sponsee and he goes all the way through this, and they get to do a fist step with you, that's another thing you don't want to miss out on, because that's really beautiful. I mean, it's great to see it working. So anyway, I stuck with that particular setup for a while. My old sponsor of 5 years, Eric, passed away, I guess, about 2 years ago. And we were in the middle of an inventory at that moment. And instead of me doing the right thing and grabbing someone, I copped the resentment and pulled the poor me. And I didn't come around for a while. And I got very unhappy very fast. I was not living spiritually. I was not sponsoring people. My disease likes to pop its head up in all other sorts of other areas. I put on a tremendous amount of weight. I wasn't talking to any of my friends. I was very close to a drink. And I crawled into a meeting. Someone threw a commitment my way. I ran into Roy, someone I've known for a long time. And I know you can't tell by looking at us, but we have a lot in common. And I asked Roy if he could sponsor me. And the conversation was, well, do you want to start from the beginning, or do you really want to just, you know, do some inventory and see what's going on? I said, well, let's do an inventory. And he showed me his take on it, which is the most accurate take that I've ever seen on this, which is what we're going to be talking about today. It's just a couple of people's experience here. I see that it's the clearest interpretation of what they're asking in here. And that was the most liberating fourth step I've done in the last 8 years, aside from the first one. Blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. And in a short period, I found myself in meetings again, happy again, with sponsees and doing the right thing. You know, so it worked just as well as it did the first time around. I've been lucky to take a couple of people up to that point. I got one guy in the middle of it who's kind of floundering, but I'm running out of stuff to talk about here. Hopefully, you know, you guys will get something out of this. If there's anything I can recommend, it's what we're going to go over today. Don't you know, think you're some kind of a warrior and go out and do it on your own, because you'll probably go insane in the middle of that. You know, what we're going to go over today, if you don't have close contact with somebody that's been through this before, that's dangerous. It really is dangerous. Again, it is designed to drag up uncomfortable feelings, uncomfortable ideas, lies that my life has been running itself on. When those things come up, you better be in close contact with a sponsee and, you know, whatever your understanding of God is. Or, you know, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. It's supposed to hurt. You know, I try and do this once a year, whether or not I think I need it. And it always surprises me. There's always something new. There's always a level of agnosticism that I didn't even know was there. And I can't seem to get to it without putting it on paper. You know, no matter how smart I think I am, it just doesn't work like that. You know, so they gave us this tool and I use it. And I'm supposed to talk for another 10 minutes, but, you know, I really think that's it. That's the deal. That's what this is about. And hopefully everybody will get something out of this today. And I appreciate everybody for being here and allowing me to do this. Thanks.
Thank you.